Nesmaksis. Seta. Nesmaksis.
Oh, those little scamps. Or this familiar cry of the Canada goose. If we play that backwards.
Do geese see God? Do geese see God?
Huh. I guess that one's a bit more of a thinker. And of course, the tricky blue jay. Play that in reverse, and you get
April Fools. April Fools.
Learn more about the incredible and real abilities of birds at our website, birdnote.org.
I'm Mark Ramhill.
KBOO's Metal Marathon, the Metal March, is back once again. And that means brand new metal merch. Go to kboo.fm/metal to check out all KBOO's new metal merch featuring exclusive artwork provided by local artist and musician at Unicron Artworks. This year's Metal Marathon is live on KBOO Friday, March 14th at 8 p.m. through Saturday, March 15th at 6 a.m. Get your very own limited edition 2025 Metal March Metal merch and listen to every installment of the Metal Marathon at kboo.fm/metal and support metal on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 11:02 a.m. Next up is the bike show.
It takes two wheels and no gasoline to keep yourself healthy and to keep the air clean. You can ride in the sunshine, you can ride in the rain. It takes two pedals, two wheels.
Hello and welcome to the KBOO Radio Bike Show, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon on 90.7 FM and streaming live on https://kboo.fm. All shows are archived on bikeshow.portlandtransport.com. My name is Alon Robb, and I will be joined today by co-host Nedra Deadweiler. Our engineer, as always, is Ty Walker. Thank you, our listeners, for joining us today. A special hello to my friend Gonenk in Istanbul, who has been, along with millions of his fellow Turkish men and women and children, protesting for democracy. My heart is with you, Gonenk. We are happy and honored to be carried also by fellow community stations across the land and by Cornucopia Radio in the UK, and are thankful for that support. Every day brings news of new attacks on government departments and programs that help people in the environment, on school lunches, vaccinations, universities, the press, the courts, food banks, scientific research, Medicaid, and truth. The list is endless. It is easy to despair, but I find strength and inspiration from all those that came before us who fought relentlessly to create a world rooted in justice and equality for all, a world of caring, solidarity, mutual aid, and beauty too. So many basic human rights that were achieved after much effort and struggle are now under assault by the racists and arsonists in power, but today too many are working to create a better world, and we are lucky that two of those individuals are with us today. In the first half of the show, we speak with Portlander Sarah Gilbert, writer, activist, and founder of Around Portland Tours, walking and cycling tours centered on themes and locales. In the second half, our guest is Monica Garrison, founder and executive director of Black Girls Do Bike, a national group, in its own words, dedicated to fostering and nurturing a vibrant community of women of color who share a passion for cycling. Before we get to our first guest, Sarah Gilbert, I would like to say hello to my co-host, Nedra Deadweiler, who's in Atlanta. Nedra, good day. How are you today?
Hello, Alon. Doing pretty well. How are you?
You know, as always, in my own little universe, there's a lot of good, but if I think of the world, I want to scream. But I sent you that beautiful photo of, double rainbow that appeared, and
yes.
Hopefully it's a good omen for good.
Yes,
good. And, you like me, we're lucky to have wonderful dogs, so those dogs always bring joy, don't they?
They really do.
Well,
a lot of laughter.
Yeah. Yep. Joy and wisdom. So I will say goodbye for now, and we'll rejoin at the half hour. And one more item of business here. I'd like to share a few news items from the vast bicycle universe. And today I have two items. One is from France, and the French newspaper Le Monde reports that Paris cycling numbers have doubled in 1 year thanks to massive investment and are still growing. In the heart of Paris, amidst the historic boulevards and bustling streets, a revolution is taking place, one fueled not by engines but by pedals. The article presents data showing that bicycle usage on Parisian streets has doubled in 1 year, a reflection of a broader societal shift towards sustainable mobility and urban renewal. As David Billiard, deputy mayor in charge of transformation of public spaces and transportation, has noted, cycling in Paris has become a fundamental aspect of the city's identity, reshaping the urban landscape in the process. The increase in the number of riders has been accompanied also by a growing and vibrant bicycle culture. The success has come after significant investment in cycling infrastructure dating back to 2015 when Mayor Anne Hidalgo first started advancing the cycling plan with 150 million euros invested to double the number of cycling lanes and create a critical mass of infrastructure. This was followed by even greater investment to fill the gap and make Paris a, quote, 100% cycling city. And Reuters, the news agency, reports that last week Parisians voted in a referendum to, I hope I could pronounce this word, pedestrianize, is that a word? A further 500 of the city's streets. 66% of Parisians voted in favor. The referendum will eliminate 10,000 more parking spots in Paris, adding to the 10,000 removed since 2020. And the additional streets will bring the total number of those so-called green lungs to nearly 700. And the Fantastic gains in Paris are accompanied by major government investment of 2 billion euros throughout the country over the next 4 years. In a future show, we hope to interview some of the architects of the Paris cycling revolution. And in Portland, Oregon, two longtime bike stores in downtown and northwest Portland have closed recently, Fat Tire Farm and West End Bikes. The stores have been in business for 40 years and 14 years respectfully, and in addition to selling bikes and repairing them, have also been community centers, places of support and camaraderie. I would like to thank the owners and workers for your many years of service creating welcoming places. I wish you well with what comes next for you. And while Portland has a fair number of bike stores in the southeast and northeast parts of town, the central city and northwest neighborhoods are left with now with but two stores. May new ones emerge and help us sail on. And those were just a few news items from the world of bicycles. And I would also like to add that for those living in Portland, every Wednesday from 3 to 6, there's a wonderful social gathering of cyclists at Migration Brewing on 3947 North Williams Boulevard. Our first guest today is Portlander Sarah Gilbert, founder of Around Portland Tours, walking and cycling tours centered on themes and locales. Ms. Gilbert has been a bicycle activist for many years, founding groups and publications like Urban Mamas. She has also written creative nonfiction, was editor of the literary magazine Stealing Time, and has written articles about such subjects as anger encountered on the road and about traffic civility in Portland's new era of congestion. Good day, Sarah Gilbert, and welcome to the Bike Show.
Thank you so much.
I'd like to start with the beginning. So maybe what are some of your early cycling memories? Were you always a cyclist?
Always, as long, when I could do it, for sure. I mean, I started biking when I was 5 or 6 in Portland. Ah. Lived here in the inner southeast, so I'm actually running tours in the neighborhoods where I first biked when I was a kid. I remember the Harrison Hill. That was the ultimate hill for me when I was a little kid.
And you've remained a cyclist throughout the years. There was no period where you said, bicycle, that's a horrible invention. That's never happened yet.
No, never. There were definitely times in my life when I didn't bike as much because of where I was living. I spent some time in the southeast of the U.S., not great cycling infrastructure there. Mm-hmm. But even when I was living in places with terrible cycling infrastructure, I still had a bike and went out to ride at occasion where I didn't commute for the years I lived on the East Coast.
And what was the cycling scene in Portland when you were young? I mean, I remember coming here many years ago, and when I'd go over the bridges, there were maybe 10 riders, and half of them were my friends. It's changed quite a lot, hasn't it?
Yeah, it sure has. You know, I definitely remember, biking in groups, but mostly it was just kids riding around. What hasn't changed, it's still hard to keep a bike in your backyard and anywhere in Portland. I remember, losing my favorite Schwinn at one point. Riding up and down Powell Boulevard after they put the cut-ins mm-hmm. in that, it's like, wow, I can get this whole way, but it still doesn't feel very safe.
Would you say that Portland is a good cycling city?
Yeah, you know, even when I was a kid and it was not nearly as supported as it is now, there was still a lot of community support mm-hmm. for cycling, which is something that I think most cities don't have and the reason why most people find it scary to ride their bikes to work in most of the country.
I find that, the infrastructure has increased greatly, the number of cyclists. It's wonderful. I live in Northwest Portland. It's wonderful to ride, along the river and so forth. But many people still say it's not safe. They're afraid of cycling. There are too many distracted drivers, emailing, too many doors opening. Is that your experience?
Well, for sure. I don't think it's easy to get to safe cycling as mm-hmm. long as cars are the prioritized mm-hmm. method of transportation everywhere. We can, do all the education and traffic striping that we want to mm-hmm. It's not going to change the culture overall, so it continues to have dangerous times, but it's really you know, very safe in abstract. Mm-hmm. You know, when you look at cycling versus a lot of other activities we could be doing, climbing Mount Hood or Y East, for instance. Mm-hmm. but yeah, we have so many problems just with general distracted driving and speed. I think most problems are really from speed.
Mm. I'm encouraged by such wonderful projects as the bike bus and riding, you know, kids riding in groups to school with adults. That's a fantastic program, and I think it helps also create a new generation of cyclists. Your parent, were your children, are they also cyclists?
Yeah, all my kids ride, sometimes for almost all of their transportation, ride and bus. When my kids were very young, right before my youngest was born, I decided to give up the car that I had and started riding, you know, pretty much for everything. So their memories of kids, being kids, are just, you know, riding on the back of my bike and then learning when they were pretty young to ride on their own. Mm-hmm. So they've been riding in traffic for, you know, for a long time.
That's good to hear, because sometimes I'm afraid, you know, the case of the children of the shoemaker go without shoes, where, you know, some of us are such ardent cyclists and our kids don't always ride.
Yeah, it's true.
In my case, I mean, some of the great memories I have, my wonderful daughter, Zoe, when she was young, we lived in Goose Hollow. She went to MLC in Northwest, and we would ride from there, from our house to school, but we rode on sidewalks by the stadium. So
yeah.
And now it's changed. So
yeah, two of my kids went to MLC too. Oh. So they too rode their bike to MLC. Yeah,
and for those who don't know, MLC, the Metropolitan Learning Center, is an alternative public school. It started in the 60s by people who were influenced by Summerhill, and many people dear to me, including Rachel, my beloved, went there throughout her childhood. It's a wonderful school.
It is.
So you've been, you know, reading a little bit about you on the web. It seems like you, when you see a problem, you like to tackle it. Over the years, there were a few issues and things you put your attention to. Tell me a little bit about your bicycle activism over the years.
Well, some of it is, I think, very important. Some of it is a little silly, but I think, you know, that happens to us. When we first started riding with our kids, lots of moms in Portland, I think, you know, we felt like there wasn't really any support for people, you know, with their bike racks weren't really set up to handle the big cargo bikes, and you know, there wasn't easy access into some of that secure parking and stuff. So we did start, you know, trying to write a lot more about our experience of cycling, which I think has kind of, you know, laid the way for the current, you know, very great atmosphere for biking and the bike bus. You know, I think a few of us tried that from time to time to do those, but there really just wasn't a huge, you know, dominance of people riding their bikes when this was, you know, 18 years ago or so, when our kids were starting school. So it's really great to see that transition. And I think, you know, my approach towards a lot of activism is always just, you know, tell your story, tell how you do it, and be loud about how you're changing your life. And I think it was really effective. I think people, you know, loved seeing that. Jonathan Mouse, you know, at Bike Portland, he was also had kids about the same age as our mom group, so we would go on big rides together. And you know, he obviously has a nice platform. So I think that was really great. As a banner for people. And you know, I think that a lot of that has fallen into the background, which, you know, is fine. I think that, you know, there's every generation has its own personalities now. There's like amazing people on TikTok who are doing all of their parenting on bikes. And one woman just had a baby, and she's been riding everywhere and posts very, you know, lovely things. And you know, we keep seeing that continual story sharing method of activism, which I think is very powerful. Another thing that I did, which definitely ends towards the silly end of the spectrum, was get turned away one day riding my bike through the drive-thru at Burgerville. And that story has kind of taken on a life of its own. I've heard it told back to me, mm-hmm. With many details incorrect. And I don't think it really matters, but, it created this, small firestorm of social media just at the right time when, everybody was paying attention to it. And Burgerville, released a statement saying that they were sorry and that they were changing their policy, throughout all of their system, that they would always allow bikes. Incidentally, they've recently taken out those bike signs. I don't know if you've noticed that. I haven't, written the CEO, who did mention me in their press release, which I felt was really nice. To see, have you changed your policy? But that did eventually lead to a law in Portland, which, if you have your drive-through open and not the inside open, you should always, allow pedestrians and bicyclists. I feel like it should go further. I don't feel like there should be any, a requirement that you have a car to go mm-hmm. through a drive-through, no matter what time of day it is or what other facilities are open.
And you mentioned storytelling, and I know you're a writer, and I want to get to that also. But before that, you are listening to The Bike Show on KBO Radio from Portland, Oregon. My name is Alon Robb, and our first guest today is Portland resident, activist, writer, Sarah Gilbert, who's also the founder of a wonderful touring company. So I'd like to ask you a little bit about this. Tell us a little bit about your company, how it came about.
Yeah, I ended up just kind of by accident with a job as a bike tour guide back in early 2014, so 11 years ago now. Oh, yeah, a long time. I was, doing a lot of online stuff, writing, editing, et cetera, and going through a divorce. So needed something that was not deadline work, mm-hmm. and just found this job by accident, and it was perfect for me. Obviously, I already like to ride my bike, mm-hmm. and I'm very interested in food and foraging and forests and stuff. So we had a version of the tour that went out to the Columbia Gorge and a food cart tour and everything. So that was great. Loved it. I love being able to basically tell stories all day long. And eventually some of my colleagues and friends in the industry, all agreed that it would be better if we didn't do it under the dominance of our current bosses. Uh-huh. So my partner and I, who we met at that bike tour company, Pedal Bike Tours, we started a company on our own, and a lot of other people from some of the other tour companies that I'd worked with came too. And wanting to have that focus on activism and active kinds of tours. So really providing an alternative that wasn't afraid to talk about politics, to talk about, the problems of Oregon's history, some of the racist underpinnings, to really tell from a kind of a land back perspective. So that opportunity to do that on our own was wonderful, and we definitely think we all really benefit from being able to be truthful.
So it's not a tour where you glorify the city and its founding fathers and ignore the history, ignore the suffering of many in Portland. So
right. Yeah. Glorifying the people, glorifying the community.
Can you describe one particular tour? Where do you go? Who are the people that join on these tours?
Yeah, one of my favorite tours that we run is the biking out in the Columbia Gorge, mm-hmm. which has its benefits and its challenges. talking about some of the the scary parts of riding with traffic. That certainly has gotten harder and harder over the years. But you know, we have vans and we, you know, take our bikes out to the Columbia Gorge and, you know, ride and hike and you know, tell stories about.
Is
about
it overnight or?
No, it's just it's a half day. We have a half day and a day long version. So we're transporting out to the gorge. Lots of my friends, when I first started doing the tours, were asking me when they saw my posts on Instagram. They were like, "How many miles do you bike a day?" Thinking that I was riding all the way from Portland out to the gorge every day.
Oh, no.
You know, and obviously it's fraught with all these conflicts too. Mm-hmm. Of, you know, in order to help people enjoy riding their bikes, you know, we're using vehicles to do it, using the roads that are taking away the river, you know, impacting salmon populations, throwing their microplastics off dams, all the rest of it. But, you know, we do have an opportunity to talk about that. Somebody's going to go out there. We also have a lot of bike tours within the city. One that we've developed and has just become really popular recently is a street art bike tour. And that is really fun because when I first moved back to Portland from the East Coast, I spent my 20s in the East Coast. And when I first moved back, street art was absolutely just persona non grata in Portland. Mm-hmm. You could not leave a, you know, really cool tag up for very long. The police were cracking down even on people displaying spray paint style urban art in their businesses. And so, you know, just to get to be having lived through this renaissance of street art in the Inner East Side has been so fantastic. And, you know, telling that story to people, you know, we get to kind of tackle a lot of things at once, you know, a lot of topics, and just like show people this great art that's created by passionate people. So we get to, you know, talk about, you know, development, talk about, you know, the rivers that used to be there, talk about some of the police brutality that's happened and the, you know, like where some of the restrictions on the street art came from, and then to get to, you know, celebrate the artists that are, working here, which are a huge, amazing collection of, you know, queer and non-binary and, trans and, you know, Black and Muslim and all kinds of different people and, you know, indigenous people who have created some great art in the Inner East Side.
And I've noticed also on your website, you know, tours to donut shops. And I read that many years ago you also had a pot tour, you know.
We did.
Our time is just zooming by. We just have a few minutes. You know, there's so much I want to know about your writing, about even these tours. For those interested in finding more about these tours, and I assume they're not just for people from out of town, locals.
We get a lot of locals.
How can they reach you? How can they find out more?
So we've got aroundportlandtours.com, and I'm also on Instagram, both with my company, and then Cafe Mama is my it's my Instagram handle. That's where I do most of my current writing.
And is there any tour that you just are aching to organize that hasn't happened yet or something?
Oh, God, there's so many.
Ruins of Capitalism tour?
Oh, God, that would be awesome. Yeah, I actually organized a Petapalooza ride that ended up not happening because of, I think it might have been COVID situation, but it was about some of the beauty that was destroyed by freeways. I think that would be a great one. I know some people others have done that, but yeah, I think more day long and maybe a couple of day long rides are things that we'd like to do more of. We're working. We've been doing this day-long tour in the Columbia Gorge, and I'm looking very forward to the eventual completion of, you know, the whole bike pathway out there. But I'd love to do more tours where we do 2 days and camp overnight with some support. We'd have to support because there's portions where you have to go on the freeway. But, you know, like taking advantage of some of these great things would be amazing.
That would be fun. Among the things you describe as knowing and loving are geology, mythology, environmental ethics, and lichen. We have about 2 minutes, but can you tell us maybe about lichen? For those of us who don't spend their time around lichen.
Yeah, well, you're probably all spending your time around lichen, whether you know it or not. But one year when I was, you know, kind of a newish tour guide, I ran out of wildflowers to show people at the end of the summer and started, you know, thinking, well, I could start talking about these mosses and lichens, and started doing just a lot of research about lichens and writing more about them. You know, lichens may be a billion years old. They're the oldest land organism, and a relationship between algae and fungus, and they come in just every shape you can imagine. They, you know, do a lot. They store water. They store poor quality, you know, pollutants in the air. They're an indication in some places, like especially in the Western Gorge, that the water is too acidic, even though, like, I describe it as not toxic in and of itself, but I notice that everything is out of balance because of lumber operations that still continue everywhere throughout the gorge, despite it being a national scenic area. You know, the protections that we hold so dear have great limits, and we can see it in the water, we can see it in the lichens, and so.
Well, may lichen continue to thrive for another billion years at least. We have been speaking with Sarah Gilbert, writer, activist, founder of Around Portland Tours and lover of lichen. Her tours sound fantastic, and they're centered around themes and locales. Thank you, Sarah, for being with us today, and all the best with your tours, your activism, your cycling, and whatever future projects you create.
Thank you.
We will take a short musical break. When we come back, Nedra will speak with Monica Garrison, Executive Director of Black Girls Do Bike, a national group dedicated to fostering and nurturing a vibrant community of women of color who share a passion for cycling. The song I chose today is Down to Joy by Van Morrison. Joy, much needed state of being in every age, including in these very challenging times. So stick around with us, please.
Coming down to joy. What did I see? What did I hear? When I was coming down, had a brand new story. But I was coming down to joy. Felt so good, gratitude. When I was coming down, coming down. There was something quite profound that I cried out loud. I had a brand new story when I was coming down to joy. Man, I felt the glory when I was coming down.
Joy. In the first half of the show, Alon interviews Sarah Gilbert of Around Portland Tours. And now we will have Monica Garrison on. She is the founder and executive director of a grassroots organization called Black Girls Do Bike. It is a space for Black women and girls to feel welcome, supported, and encouraged to bicycle. Hello, Monica.
Hello.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Glad to be here.
That's good. I'm glad to have you on. I've known you for a while, at least, you know, in these bike streets, and it's been really wonderful just to see, I guess, the expansion of Black Girls Through Bikes and the effect of it. Everywhere I go, I'm like, someone asks me, do you know Black Girls Through Bike? I'm like, yeah, who doesn't?
That's good to hear.
Yes, it is. It's great to hear. So I want to start off before we get into a discussion about your work. It's just to like focus on you a little bit, and I'm wondering if you have a story, because you are a storyteller in many ways, and can you tell us a story to help people understand who you are?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think probably I would focus on a meaningful moment that I had serving in the capacity of, you know, leading Black Girls Do Bike. And that was probably about 3 years ago when I had the privilege of bringing the ladies from our organization to my hometown of Pittsburgh, PA. It was pretty much an unforgettable experience. If you can imagine, 250 plus women of color from all over the country came to Pittsburgh, and they rode, they connected, they celebrated together. And I remember this one moment where we were all pedaling along one of my favorite trails in Pittsburgh. And usually I prefer to kind of fade into the background. I don't love crowds, slightly socially awkward. But I made an effort to like push myself and kind of ride through the group and talk to everyone. And it was really amazing. And I just had this moment where I kind of looked around and I saw this beautiful sea of Black and brown women laughing and supporting each other. And I really at that moment kind of felt the confidence that was radiating from these women, and it was a bit overwhelming. I got a little teary-eyed, but it was just proof positive that, you know, what I had started had grown into something pretty amazing.
Definitely. And you just kind of described yourself as maybe an introvert. And however, you started an organization that is really oriented around groups and people and engagement. Has that had, like, you know, you just described a situation where it had to push, you pushed yourself to, you know, like engage and to interact and just like come out of your shell really in a grand way. And I'm wondering, what changes has Black Girls Do Bike, what meaningful changes has it made for you personally?
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, I feel like we're in our 12th year. I feel like I'm a different person, to be honest with you. When we started, I was married. I had young kids. I was, as you described, an introvert. I think that's an accurate description of me. And over the years, Black Girls Bike has helped me to grow, not just my personality, but my ability to open up and interact with people and make connections, things that I never really thought I would be able to conquer. And I've managed to kind of make it a part of my personality. And the benefits that I've reaped have been amazing in terms of connections with other women, something that is priceless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very cool. Thank you, Monica. So kind of going back to your beginning with cycling, how old were you? Where were you? Do you have any memorable experiences or memories with when you started bicycling, or when it became like a big part of your life?
Yeah, I think as a child, I rode just like many people do. And it was my like favorite summer activity with my friends around the neighborhood. But cycling re-entered my life in 2013. And that was when I was going through just a bit of a time when my life was unbalanced. I had, as I mentioned, I was a young mother, work, I had the daily pressures of life. And I was looking for a way to kind of de-stress and improve my overall well-being. And cycling, after a bit of, you know, self-analysis, I realized that cycling was the time in my life when I was really happy, when I was young and carefree. So I said, let's pursue that and see where it takes me. And I bought a bike. I started riding around my city. And immediately I felt freedom. I felt joy. The wind in my face, the sense of adventure. It did indeed remind me of childhood. And then there were lots of benefits in terms of, you know, bringing my stress levels down, releasing those endorphins, helping me to appreciate my city in a new way. And also it was a great way to spend time with my kids who were fairly young at the time, but they learned to ride very early. So we were riding buddies, as of that summer and spring.
Very cute. That means their kids, if they were young, then they're like adults now?
Yeah. 17 and 14 now.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. A big part of their life too then.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you just described like an embodiment of liberation through bicycling and a gift that you're giving to, you know, many women across and beyond the U.S. Before you started, or as you're doing Black Girls Do Bike, I'm not sure like how it goes, but what is I guess your professional purpose, because, you know, executive director of an organization that does a lot of personal work, advocacy and all these things. What do you see as your purpose with Black Girls Do Bike?
I think when I started, I didn't have a clear purpose other than just to, like, you know, share this joy that I had discovered with other women like me. But I think over time, I look at it now as like a healing work, because that really is what women need, not just Black women, but women need support. They need to feel empowered. They need to heal, and everyone has a story. So I think that's where I found the most purpose professionally, in creating spaces where women can build community and discuss, you know, their lives and find friendship. And ultimately the bike is almost the backdrop to these interactions that are happening.
Yeah. That's true. The bike doesn't have to be in the foreground, as in, like, if it's a sport, it can be in the background if it's, like, a lifestyle. It's part of, like, your daily and what you do. And very much your mission, which is a wonderful mission, it really talks about, I guess, the values of the organization and what you do, from promoting the joy of cycling, you know, creating a platform for people to find one another. How does, and also you're promoting this image that, to me, it speaks more authentically than representational. There's a lot of representation, you know, representing out there, but mm-hmm. to me that can be very like limiting in terms of the real, what's rooted in something that shows up in an authentic way, or allowing people to be present and a part of an authentic way. How do people get involved with Black Girls Do Bike? You know, can you tell us more about the platform and what people find there?
Yeah, so I think in terms of getting involved, it's very easy. We've got a website, blackgirlsdobike.org, along with a thriving community on Facebook of women. We have over 100 chapters now, and each chapter has a group page, so you can join the local chapter that's nearest you and connect with ladies in your neighborhood. And we also have a YouTube channel, which we've been working on for the last couple of years, just to have a platform to share stories of the women that we encounter and share the amazing stories that we run into. But I think in terms of the mission, it's all about, you know, celebrating the joy of cycling and riding the bike. As you said, it's the bike is there, but you're building community at the same time. And often what we do is we connect women from across the country with their local chapters. We offer group rides, mentorship, encouragement, and we've got resources like, you know, cycling tips and access to some dope Black Girls Who Bike gear that hopefully everyone mm-hmm. loves. And we've always got those inspiring stories that we're trying to tell to motivate and inspire other ladies to join us.
Can you tell us one story that, I don't know, a recent story or one that's been a kind of a longstanding encouraging story that you could lift up?
I encounter lots of stories of women who, you know, have taken back their health with cycling or who have, you know, forged these long-term friendships with other members, and now they're traveling and cycling in other parts of the world. I love those stories. I think I don't want to leave anyone out, so I won't name names, but we have a lot of sheroes. I just not too long ago, I went to a retirement party for one of our sheroes that had been with us for 10 years in Columbus, Ohio, I can say that. And it was amazing, just the number of women who were there to show their appreciation. And I had to show up because I wanted to show my appreciation as well. But it gave me a good sense of, like, you know, I've been at this for, as I said, 12 years. And it's good to know that there are a lot of women who have been on this journey with me the whole way, which means that they believe in the mission. It means that they, you know, they feel supported. And so that's always great. And then we have women who are, you know, they're having education for kids on bikes, and they're bike mechanics, and they are, you know, they join boards, and they're fighting for infrastructure changes and improvements and just generally pushing the cycling community forward. So we have lots of great examples. I meet women every year who have unique stories.
Yeah, those all sound great. You are listening to KBOO Radio 90.7 FM and streaming on KBOO.fm. And we are speaking with Monica Garrison, founder and executive director of Black Girls Who Bike. And thanks for sharing those stories, Monica. You just said you have over 100 chapters, which is pretty amazing. That's a lot of work, just like keeping people organized and also shows that the mission is expanding. And there are a few states where you're looking for leadership: Utah, Wyoming, South Dakota, West Virginia, Vermont. What does it mean to be a leader in Black Girls Do Bike? And if you're in those states, listen up.
I always say that we're in almost every major city in the U.S., which is quite fulfilling. But yeah, our leaders are, they're connectors, they're motivators. I like to say they're the boots on the ground, and they keep me informed of what's happening at the beginning levels of our org. But they're essentially the heartbeat of the movement. We wouldn't exist without them and their efforts. And they do things like organize rides. They offer encouragement. They create welcoming spaces for the women in their cities who might otherwise feel intimidated to even start cycling. And I think what's most important is that sometimes we think leadership is about being the strongest and the fastest rider, but oftentimes it's really about allowing space for the community to grow and thrive and making sure that no one really feels alone in their cycling journey. And I think that's what our sheroes are best at doing.
I like that sort of like being a challenge to what quote unquote leadership is, what it is, and how we typically see leaders, you know, like strength and the might. I was at something recently for women, a book release or a book talk, and they were saying that empathy is a skill set, a leadership skill set for the 21st century. And it sounds like the women who are leaders for Black Girls Who Bike, that they express a lot of empathy, which is, you know, being able to care about other people and bring people together. I mean, it takes a, it is a skill set. Yeah, it's absolutely a skill set.
Yeah, we have that No Woman Left Behind policy, and that's a great example of, you know, walking in that empathy.
Yeah, that's awesome. Monica, you are the executive director and chief storyteller of Black Girls Who Bike. Me to be the chief storyteller, and what makes a good story?
Yeah, I found myself in this role. It just kind of, I won't say it happened organically. I actually spoke to someone, a mentor, many years ago, and she was like, Black Girls Bike is amazing, but you need a good story. And if you have a good story, you will open doors that you, you know, didn't imagine that you could open. And she was right. She gave me the motivation to do that. And what was told to me was, you have a story, you created this thing and it's growing. So that's where you need to start. And so while I was not someone who wanted to do interviews and public speaking, I realized the importance of getting my story out, and that would lead to giving me the opportunity to tell the stories of all the women who are part of Black Girls Who Bike. So I say a good story is one that connects folks, inspires, obviously, and moves people to take action in some way. And storytelling is important, I think, most because it kind of humanizes the mission. So it's not just about the bikes. It's really about the people. And at Black Girls Who Bike, we share stories of women who have, like, overcome fears, found new friendships, transformed their health. And these are stories that matter. These are stories that represent our community. And these are stories that are going to encourage others to join us and believe in the mission.
Yeah, that's really awesome. It's good to hear, because, you know, I appreciate it. I think we all appreciate a good story. But then also specifically to see how you've used it in your work to kind of to reach an audience. You know, people are listening, whether or not they come out for a ride, they know that the organization is there, and they see the impact. So being able to share that with folks is real, is also, like, you know, very essential. As we are kind of winding down with our time, what is one hope or many hopes that you hold for women of color, for Black women, Black and brown women, in their relationship to bicycling, regardless of what type of, you know, was it transportation, recreation, health and wellness, social, like whatever reason people choose to ride, because there are many, what are some hopes you have for the women who come and those who will come in the future?
I hope that they realize that they belong in the cycling space. I think that's at the heart of it. I'd love for more Black women and women of color to see the bike as a tool for joy, a tool for freedom. And like you said, whether they're in transportation, recreation, whether they're doing it for health or for like social connection, they do belong, and they're wanted. And they can reap the benefits. And I basically, the road is open to all of us, and we all kind of deserve to take up space. And even as the next few years look to be challenging, it's nice to know that there is a group of women who is ready and able and willing to support you on your cycling journey, but also your life journey.
Yeah, so important. Is there anything that's next for you? And I also just want to say thanks for sharing, like, you know, especially in a time, the political challenges that we're in right now, like how bicycling can be more essential, and is, you know, for life And just for that social connection, for that health and wellness, I mean, it can't be it can't be spoken enough of or said enough or too many times how important it is. Do you have any recommendation around, like, that timidity that folks may have with, say, getting involved? Is there, you being also an introvert, I'm an introvert, like, what is that, you know, to, like, break in and just, like, go for it?
Yeah, I think having a group of women who are going to hold you accountable and be welcoming, we talk a lot about being welcoming. We don't want to be intimidating. And we meet women where they are, whether that be, you know, financially or socially or skill level. So if you're a beginner rider and, you know, a mile is all you can do, we're here to help you complete that mile. And as you progress, what you find in our org is there are women of all skill levels. So sometimes it's intimidating to show up to a ride and not know, you know, who's going to be there, how long it's going to be, what the intensity is going to be. So we try to be very upfront about that, but we also have, you know, fail safes built in so that no woman is left behind, so that, you know, you can set goals and achieve them, and there are other women who are working towards those same goals with you. And ultimately, you know, we just want to kind of be that thing that levels those barriers that are keeping you back. So we've been at it for 12 years. So there's not a whole lot that, you know, you could be holding inside that's keeping you from joining us that we don't have a solution for. So give us a shot.
Yeah, that's really great. What's next for you, Monica, or Black Girls Who Bike?
Yeah, I think I'm looking long term. I would love to, in 10 years from now, still be here, still have Black Girls Who Bike, be here changing lives. As an organization, we are going to be working next on education. We just had a class of women who became LCIs, League Cycling Instructors, and these are women who are sheroes, so now we have folks who are going to be making an even greater impact on their communities, and I would love to, and I'm working behind the scenes to keep this as a constant so that we're constantly having classes so that we can educate the women who enter Black Girls Who Bike, and so they leave better on the other end.
Yeah, sounds amazing. And Monica, where can people find you? Find Black Girls Who Bike?
Yeah, we're on all the social platforms, pretty much blackgirlswhobike.org, and then everything else is Black Girls Who Bike. And yeah, take a look at our videos if you want to learn more about what we do and how we do it. And you can support us by buying our cool gear or donating anything that your heart is moved to do. We appreciate the support.
Yay. Thank you so much, Monica, for being here. It was a pleasure to talk to you today.
Thanks for having me. It was good to talk to you again.
Yes, it's been a while. Okay, you have been listening to the KBOO Bike Show, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon. My name is Nedra Deadweiler. I would like to thank our guests, Sarah Gilbert and Monica Garrison, co-host Alon Robb, our engineer, Ty Walker and Chris Smith, and Josh Petrick for making all shows available at bikeshow.portlandtransport.com. And a big thanks to you, all of our listeners from around the globe. Thank you for joining us today, and may all of your rides be safe, enlightening, and full of joy. Take care.
Takes two wheels and no gasoline to keep yourself healthy and to keep the air clean. You can ride in the sunshine, you can ride in the rain. It takes two pedals, two wheels and a chain. Every
body, ride your bicycle. Let's get together and leave our cars home. Everybody, get on your bicycle. Let's get together to pedal and roam. You can take a ride up in Forest Park. You can ride with the light if you ride in the dark. You can ride from the mountain down to the beach. You can ride on a trail, you can ride in the street. You can ride through a puddle, you can ride in the rain. You can take it on a bus, you can take it on a train. Take a ride through the waterfront or down from the zoo. You can take a ride anywhere you want to. Everybody, ride your bicycle. Let's get together and leave our cars home. Everybody, get on your bicycle. Let's get together to pedal and roam. It doesn't matter if you're big or small. You can take a ride to work, you can ride to the mall. Just keep the sky up above and the ground underneath. Get some wind in your hair and some bugs in your teeth. Everybody, ride your bicycle. Let's get together and leave our cars home. Everybody, get on your bicycle. Let's get together to build a home.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM.